Gonzalez, Mr. Ganella.
Said everything that could be said.
Yeah. May it please the court. My name is John Ganella. I represent the petitioner in this matter, Roman Sokoloff. Your Honors, I believe the issue in this case has somewhat changed with the recent passage of the Real ID Act, and I'd like to address the court's jurisdiction on the basis of that, if it pleases the court, and also with regard to the recent submission by the service in the form of a letter, I believe, dated September 2nd, with their explanation of the Real ID Act and the subsequent court's jurisdiction in this case. Recently, with the passage of that act, which essentially codified and amended Section 242 of the Immigration Act, Congress stated that the courts would not have jurisdiction to review discretionary decisions of the Attorney General.
Even before the Real ID Act, it looked to me like this was a case where the immigration judge says, I'm exercising my discretion. I think he says something like, you are not worthy of an exercise of my discretion or something in this for this application. You don't warrant a favorable exercise of discretion. That's the phrase. And we never have reviewed those. The Attorney General has that discretion, so you can get up to the threshold and you can still fail in these asylum claims if the Attorney General decides in his discretion not to give you asylum. One of the differences between asylum and the Convention Against Torture, et cetera.
Well, that's correct with regard. There was a discretionary bar contained in the Act, and with regard to asylum cases. And however, this case also involves petitioner's application for adjustment of status based upon his wife's petition for alien relative. In that exercise of discretion and with regard to the Act does call for certain exceptions. And I would state that in this case, Judge Vinokur could have said 100 times, this is an exercise of discretion. But where the immigration judge at best mischaracterizes evidence which is in the record, or at worst fabricates other evidence which is not contained in the record, I think that necessarily involves, both under the discretionary bar and under the Real ID Act, it necessarily involves a violation of due process, which is a constitutional issue and which is an exception to the bar of jurisdiction for this court.
It's awfully easy to raise. I mean, we see almost anything can be converted into a due process claim. So we have to be careful in characterizing, I would say, the argument. A judge could say, I don't find credible your story that you just happened to find this ID in the back of your cab or whatever. And maybe you could say that's a violation of due process because he should have. But surely there's got to be some principled distinction between a due process claim and a claim that either evidence isn't believed or is not admitted, perhaps because of whatever reason.
Well, I would argue that I would respond to that with two arguments. First, the judge didn't simply say I don't believe it. He said I don't believe it for these reasons, and for the reasons that he stated. For example, Judge Vinokur stated he did not believe petitioner's wife because she had signed an I-751 petition to remove conditional status for her previous husband prior to them separating, which was, I think the judge stated, September of 2000. It was clear from the record and from the I-751 itself, she did not sign it until February 2001. So it's simply a mistake at best.
But, is it a mistake about anything important? I mean, what I got from Judge Vinokur's opinion here is that he just really thought that this story about how this ID came was preposterous. And, maybe some of the details he listed don't add up, but these are oral decisions that they render, and I just wonder, it seems to me it would be very unfair reading of his opinion to come to any conclusion other than one that I came to, which is that he just doesn't believe this story.
That may be the case, but where he bases his non-belief, his incredibility of the story on facts which are incorrect or don't have any basis in the record, that's an abuse of his discretion. And that in and of itself is a question of law which needs to be reviewed in light of a due process claim. Second of all, to respond secondly to Your Honor's previous question, when we're talking about the exercise of discretion, courts have also found that where there are certain specific legal guidelines to be applied to a decision, that is not in and of itself discretionary. We have the case of Nakamoto versus Ashcroft, and again, that was a question of where a judge determined.
This is a little common sense. How could it be that she would lose her former husband's identification card in the taxi? What is she doing with her former husband's identification? Doesn't he need his identification?
It was an old ID that was expiring. They had been married. They had been living together. Perhaps he didn't take all of his belongings when he left. Maybe he left something behind. Maybe he had a driver's license and didn't feel he needed the identification card. There could be a million reasons why it's possible,
I believe, to have a state ID card and a driver's license simultaneously.
I'm sorry?
It is possible to have both of those documents.
It's also possible to have duplicates. He may have lost it earlier and gone to get a new one. It's possible she could have been walking around with his ID or other personal belongings of his. She meets her new husband months later. He drives a cab. I'm sure she rode in the cab. Maybe she dropped it. There was absolutely no evidence to believe that the petitioner stole this from her prior husband, because the record is clear, which is what Judge Vinicor suggests, but the evidence is clear from the record that there is no way that petitioner could have known her previous husband before this. There's nothing indicating he had any knowledge of who he was until she told him, or that he had any contact with her prior husband. So there is no way he could have stolen this, as the court suggests.
That's all merits. Maybe you should go back to jurisdiction, because the government, of course, is going to stand up and say we should just dismiss this petition for want of jurisdiction, and we won't even worry about any of this, if that's correct.
Well, again, initially, I would repeat that what we have is a due process issue based on the fact that the facts upon which the judge bases his decision are an abuse of discretion. They're contrary to the manifest weight of the evidence. Secondly, again, there are specific legal guidelines that the court must follow in order to make the decision to adjust the status and approve his petition. Where are the specific legal guidelines? The courts, such as the Ninth Circuit, have said that a reviewing court would have jurisdiction. It's not simply a discretionary issue when we are applying factual issues to specific legal guidelines. And what we have in Section 245A of the Act are three specific guidelines for adjustment of status. The alien must make an application for adjustment, the alien must be eligible to receive that, and an immigration visa must be immediately available. So what we have is three specific guidelines which the court must follow. If there are specific legal guidelines and facts that must be applied to those guidelines, then the court has jurisdiction to review that application of facts. Finally, at least in the Ninth Circuit, the degree of discretion to be applied is also relevant. In cases such as Anna International versus Wade.
I don't know why you said that the immigration judge said that he thought your client had stolen the identification card. I didn't see that.
I believe there's one place in the record where the judge...
he said it seems the respondent knowingly tried to obtain a false identification, different name. That's not the same thing.
Well, I would have to review the record, but at least at one point in the record, the judge states something to the effect of, I don't want to make any assumptions, but this could have been one way that he obtained it.
Well, and it could have been, but he didn't base his denial of favorable ruling on that.
He may not have, but as this court has stated recently, in the case of Nanyang versus...
I don't think it really matters how he got the card, but his testimony that he presented it as a lark to the
going to the Bureau.
To the Motor Vehicle Bureau, that's highly implausible.
It may be highly implausible, but what is also the
it
fact
highly
is that...
It's also extremely irresponsible.
Absolutely, in which he pled guilty for and received 6 months supervision. However, he had this ID card for over, I believe, a year, and there was no evidence to suggest that he maintained possession of it or that he used it for any other purpose, to illegally obtain another identity as
But clearly, the reason he got the reason he used it was that he thought that he could use it to his advantage, this fraudulent identity.
That's what the court assumes.
He may have decided not to, you know.
Well,
but nevertheless, it's pretty dangerous when you start stealing a person's identity on a lark, you know.
The
or
court,
say
I believe,
it's on a lark or something like that.
The court, I believe, seems to imply, the immigration court seemed to imply that he knew his application for asylum was being denied, and he wanted to concoct some other identity so that he could remain in this country. And that's simply not the case. He took no other steps to do that. He had recently married.
He thought it would be, you know, it's helpful to have multiple identities, right?
Belt and suspenders.
Never can tell when it won't come in handy to be somebody else.
It may be. I see my time has expired. I'd like to save some time for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Goodell. Miss Edison?
May it please the Court, Kristen Edison for the Attorney General.
You'll have to speak a little louder, Ms. Edison.
Okay. What the Court must decide is whether the discretionary denial of petitioner's application for adjustment of status is reviewable. This is the sole issue properly before the Court because it's the only issue that petitioner raised. The immigration judge and the board expressly and purely denied the application in the exercise of discretion, and the INA expressly precludes judicial review of this determination. And under the Real ID Act, discretionary determinations still fall outside the jurisdiction of the Court of Appeals.
But what if the immigration judge had said, I can see in the record that Mr. Solokoff is a member of Al-Qaeda, and therefore I'm going to exercise my discretion. I don't think we want to have a favorable exercise of discretion for adjustment of status for Al-Qaeda members. And that was just a flat error. Is this completely unreviewable in your view? Not a shred of evidence in the record. He's mixed up two files, you know, whatever.
That would be a question that the immigration judge would need to consider.
You'll have to speak louder, Ms. Edison. I can barely hear you.
Could you please repeat the question?
My question, when you say there is no jurisdiction to review discretionary denials of adjustment of status in this case, what I'm trying to get at is suppose the package of facts before the judge that are the package of facts on which he's basing this discretionary decision are flawed. And I gave you an extreme example that the judge has mixed up some files and he thinks Mr. Solokoff is an Al-Qaeda member. And he says, even though you have all these other things, you know, a bona fide marriage and all the rest of it, I just don't think you're worthy of an exercise of discretion, so I'm going to say no. But there's a problem in the creation of the facts. That's a different thing to review than the ultimate exercise of discretion, but usually if the discretion is being exercised on the basis of an incorrect package of facts, that's a problem. And I want to know if the government's position is there's no jurisdiction in those cases.
We would review the decision for an abuse of discretion in that case, Your Honor.
Well, if it's only abuse of discretion, then your position, as you've presented it in these briefs, is that the Court of Appeals has no jurisdiction to see if the discretion was abused. And so immigration judges can start just throwing darts at the wall or mixing files up or playing shuffle with them or whatever else they may do. And I'm not saying it's this case necessarily. Maybe there's nothing at all wrong with what Judge Vinokur had in the record before him and based his exercise of discretion on. But I want to know if there is some way of reviewing that record on which the discretionary decision is based.
I think as a part of that question, Judge, if you'll forgive me, isn't this an appeal from the Board, Immigration Board of Review?
Yes, the Board adopted and affirmed the decision of the immigration judge.
So that there has been a review of the discretionary decision of the administrative law judge, the immigration law judge.
Yes, and the Board specifically adopted that finding of the immigration judge after reviewing the evidence of record.
So that for purposes of due process, at least, he received the due process of having somebody review the findings of the original judge, administrative law judge. And all we're doing is finding out whether or not the position of the board was reviewable at all. And your position is it is not.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Additionally, even assuming jurisdiction, the government maintains that the immigration judge and the board acted well within its discretion in this decision, considering the equities and concluding that petitioner's marriage to a U.S. citizen did not outweigh the countervailing factors in this case.
Despite what you're saying, you actually quote with apparent approval, no, it's your own words, on page 14, you say court's jurisdiction is barred because the denial of his application was a matter of discretion and petitioner has not raised any colorable due process claims. The implication is that if, as in Judge Wood's example, the fact-finding was so arbitrary that it violated due process, then there would be review. So what is your position?
In this case, Your Honor.
Not in this case.
As a general matter, can we review matters appealed from the Board of Review, which clearly violate due process?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe we
said. Atta girl. Hang in there. At least we have the Constitution still intact.
Unless the court has any other questions, I think I'll conclude.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Edison. And Mr. Gunnell, your time has expired, but we'll give you a minute if you have anything further.
First, the Board of Appeals did review this. However, all they stated was, we agree. We agree with the judge's decision. They made no other separate
but
findings.
One point that the government made is that the factual error that the judge made in his opinion was brought to his attention in a petition for reconsideration, and he nevertheless did not change his decision. So he corrected himself, didn't he?
Well, one of those.
So
factors.
If he corrected himself, it meant he didn't think that mistake was material. So.
One of those factual errors he created, and that was whether the petitioner's wife had been in the taxi cab, which the government states was a misstatement in their brief. But that was only one of the errors. What this court has stated as recently as last week.
Well, what was the other error?
The other error was how he came into the possession of the card. Another error was.
What do you mean, how? We don't know how he came into possession of the card.
Well, another error would have been the petitioner's wife signing an I-751 while she was separated from her husband. Right. It was clear she wasn't separated from the husband until later. I will stop at this point.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to both counsel, and court will be in recess until 9:30 Monday.